I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I am Sean Watson.
And we are Commander In. Yeah! Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to check us out on Twitter at CommanderInMTG and talk to us there. We're also on Facebook and a variety of other places. This episode, we have a wonderful show lined up for you, don't we, gentlemen? We have a very special guest, the godfather of Commander, the Shuffling Sommelier, our second two-time guest, Sheldon Menery.
How you doing, fellas?
Hey.
Yay.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Sheldon. Our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming on again, Sheldon. And again.
Again. Hey, and let's not forget to talk about what we're drinking at the top of the show.
That's right. So, Sheldon, what are you drinking?
Well, it's 11:30 in the morning, so I'm drinking Stumptown Coffee Roasters French Roast. It is amongst the finest coffees you'll ever have, and I get it shipped in from Portland once a month. They send me, you know, an order. Interestingly enough, there's somebody at Stumptown Coffee Roasters who's a Magic fan because
excellent
because. I'd say two times out of three, so it must be the person that packs the order, there's, on the outside of the package in big Magic marker, are the letters Wooburg.
That's excellent.
Is it one of them coffee houses where you can get, like, custom blends made? Because if you can, we should get one for our friends over on a fellow podcast called The Commander's Brew.
Ooh, Commander's Brew. That sounds more like a beer, though.
That's true.
I don't drink beer, so...
Although I'm having coffee right now, it just so happens that this afternoon we're having some friends over to help diminish the size of our wine cellar. You know, since we're moving in 6 weeks or so, and we want to transport less wine, we're having our wine nerd friends over to lighten our load, as it were.
That is a real issue, too.
I know when I'm,
yeah, 30 cases.
I'm moving house, I need to get people over to drink gallons of wine, otherwise it just hurts. Yeah. Has Sheldon needs help moving house become a sort of byword for going and getting roaringly drunk in your area?
Well, I don't know about Sheldon. Roaringly drunk. I mean, after all, we're civilized Americans, not soccer hooligans. But
look, it's not a night out unless you've smashed up a bus stop and had a fight with a police officer.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the reasons we host these things is because we don't have to drive anywhere after.
Good thinking.
It is, as our listeners know, banning season, and we have Sheldon on to talk about... We have Sheldon on to talk about the recent modern bans, and we've put together a list of affected deck archetypes and cards you might want to speculate on. And so, because we know our listeners really, really enjoy having all of their deck prices controlled by the whims of a small select group of Magic players.
We're going to go deep into a deck tech on how you can rebuild your Amulet Bloom and Splinter Twin decks.
Sure. That's coming up. Yes. Especially now that a couple of crucial cards in those combinations have been reduced in price. No. Actually... We're going to talk about the recently announced changes to Commander. Sheldon, thank you for coming on to talk to us about this. It's quite an honor, actually.
I'm happy to come talk about them. And I know there's already a lot of chatter about the changes that we've made. So it'll be nice to talk about it with a group of people who aren't screaming at me.
Oh, I haven't started yet. I'm just oh, right.
I actually, you know what? I I think that, and obviously I'm teasing this a little bit, but I don't know if anybody's actually going to scream about any of these changes.
Well, as soon as you ban a popular card, there'll be people that'll act like you've shot their puppy.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, this is Magic the Gathering, after all. There is plenty of salt just below the thin soil surface of the community.
Fair.
Before we launch into that, how's Yasova? Have you two still been seeing each other?
Nearly exclusively. although I've been cheating on Yasova with Azuri Claw of Progress. We've been running our Commander 2015 league that I wrote about, I don't know, a month ago or so. And it's been the one that's it's been the thing that's kept me away from playing Yasova. But yeah, she's still definitely my favorite deck because she creates those unusual and sort of epic game states that you love about the format, and you know, packing stuff up to move. I've only kept 6 or 7 decks out and put the other 30 or so in a box, and Yasova is definitely one of the ones I've kept out.
Is it true, Sheldon, that you're seeing Azuri only for an in with his manicurist?
Yes.
I thought so. His dentist is excellent, too.
Well, and the manicurist's dog groomer's brother is the maitre d' at a very nice restaurant that is tough to get into. So, you know,
yeah,
there's that.
Yeah, you're planning ahead and taking one for the team, as it were.
10,000-foot view. Always the 10,000-foot view.
Excellent. So, if we have time, we'll get into Commander 2015, and we'll talk about your favorite new commander, experience counters, and the like. But I think it's fair. We've probably teased our listeners enough at this point. Let's talk about these changes.
Sure.
Do you want to run through them? Will you go through the first one, and then we'll talk?
Sure. We've made 3 changes. The first, as promised, is the Mulligan rule. And we have decided to adopt the Vancouver Mulligan with the first free multiplayer option. So we are lined up. Basically, Commander Mulligans are now lined up with normal Magic Mulligans. You go 7-7-6-5, and if you take less than 7, you scry 1. The reason we did this is because it made the most sense. You know, we're gamers, and we want to find the perfect solution. And, you know, those of us who've been playing Magic for 20 years realize that, or 22 years or 23 years now, realize that when it comes to mulligans, there's no perfect solution. Variance is a thing in Magic. And we think that the Vancouver Mulligan, with the free multiplayer option, gives players the best opportunity to get a playable opening hand without being able to abuse some of the hand sculpting things that the partial Paris did. Toby and Gavin are very smart with numbers, and they ran simulations they both independently wrote scripts to test hands and ran simulations with hundreds of thousands of hands. And there was a slight, and I mean like fractions of a point difference in what we call the playable hand between the partial Paris and the Vancouver. So, you know, it seems if there's no large gain from differing from normal Magic, then it doesn't seem to make sense to do so.
That makes a lot of sense. We had kind of adopted a blend between the Partial Paris and the Vancouver Mulligan. Basically, still Partial Paris, but if you started with less than 7 cards in hand, you got to scry 1.
Yeah, that seems eminently reasonable. We'll continue to support local groups, fitting the mulligan that best goes with their own group. We'll have some suggestions for the on the official website for other mulligans. Sure, when the RC gets together to play, we're going to continue to use the Geese Mulligan. So, we're a highly trusted group, and that's not a mulligan that I think works in other settings.
Right.
You have to be with the 5 or 6 people that you always play with, whose motivations you trust all the time. So, the mulligan, like I said, we promised the change, and I we're going to find that I know that there are going to be people that think that Partial Paris gives them a better chance at a playable hand. And I think, again, people smarter than me with math say otherwise.
Mm. Yeah, you also get people that use Partial Paris to hard mulligan just to find that turn one Serra Ascendant or Sol Ring.
Or whatever, or, right. So, yeah, there's...
Pick whatever you like.
Yeah, there's
I don't
much
see
less
that
abuse.
As much as...
There's much less abuse possible with the Vancouver mulligan.
Yeah, I don't see the aggressive mining for Serra Ascendant or Sol Ring as much as I do just trying to find all the lands in your commander's colors in your opening hand.
Right. Some of the discussion I saw online was, and it came during the off-color fetch discussion, was, well, I have to have all three colors of mana by turn three. I'm like, that's not really, I wouldn't call that the bottom line for the playable hand. I would say maybe all three colors by turn five and five lands by turn five, but all three colors are, I have to be able to cast blue, blue, blue on turn three. Yeah, that's taking it a little too far.
So, Nate, if you are playing with the new Mulligan rule, you with Animar as your commander, and your opening hand has Forest, Island, Sol Ring, and no other land, do you mulligan that away?
No, I don't.
No, because you got that. The forest. No. The forest is gonna cultivate you into the mountain.
Indeed, but I know people that would sit there and go, well, in the old system, I'm playing devil's advocate here instantly. I could Paris away and try and hit my mountain to get the perfect opening hand.
Besides, if by turn five he only has a forest and island in play, he's casting Prophet of Krufix anyway.
Right.
That's true, and then he could just churn all his creatures out and the game turns into a farce.
Alternately, you could ban Prophet of Krufix. Which,
no, that would never happen.
Which is point number two. We have indeed banned Prophet of Krufix.
Well,
Yasova's crying. You made Yasova cry.
I made a lot of Temur generals cry.
There are two approaches to this, three approaches to this as a commander player that spring to mind. One, which is I think the one most people are going to have, which is I don't really care.
Right.
I think a lot of people would have seen that coming.
Yeah.
Two, how dare you, I'm never going to play Commander again, have a rant on Reddit or some forum somewhere and then continue playing Commander anyway just without Prophet Krufix. Or three, do what I'm going to do, which is go, cool, I get to put a new card in my Maelstrom Wanderer deck.
Right. we had basically watched the sort of slide of assessment of Prophet Krufix go from the excitement of it to the frustration of it. In the beginning, everybody's like, oh, this is a cool card, and yay, I get to play creatures, and so forth and so on. And, we listened to the community, and the difficulties people started having with it in their groups are what led us to really consider about, consider banning it. We talked about it on and off for the last, couple of meetings. And, this time we sort of felt the groundswell of Prophet is no longer a card that happens to go nicely into your blue-green X decks, but it's sort of driving the choice of how to play your blue-green X decks. And we'd rather a little more variation in what people are playing in those colors.
Yeah, we've actually discussed, I think it was you were our guest when we discussed the Prophet Krufix the first time, coincidentally, Sheldon. I'm hoping we planted a seed of doubt. No, I'm joking.
No.
I think the question I would ask, because when we discussed it before, sorry, let me get to my point. One of the thoughts I had, and I think there's a general agreement, was that one of the reasons it wasn't necessarily ban-worthy is because it was a two-color card, so it was only going to go into a certain fix of decks.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it would still be banned if it wasn't in blue and green, which are essentially, agree or disagree with the statement, in my opinion, the two most powerful colors in Commander. because you've got card draw and mana ramp in, as your sort of wheelhouse abilities.
Yeah, well, certainly I agree with your assessment that the blue and green are the two most powerful colors in Commander, and together they make the most power. You know, everybody wants to play blue-green X, right? Doesn't matter what,
yeah.
Whether it's white, red, or black. It's blue-green X because, like you said, card draw, mana ramp, and then whatever else it is that I want to do.
Mm-hmm. If the Prophet wasn't the Prophet Krufix, it was the Prophet of Iroas.
Yeah, I don't...
But still did the same thing, would it have been banned? Is really what I'm going to end game.
Well, I mean, it's just difficult. Difficult to think, to see that possibility, because, I mean, it's a hypothetical, and it's not a card that a non-brain-damaged person who understands the color pie would produce.
The person that produced that card would be fingerless within a week.
Yeah.
If Ethan Fleischer was to be correct.
So, it's probably going to do the same. It's still an effective turn for everybody else's turn. I mean, that's always been the big criticism, right? At least with Seedborn Muse, your creatures don't have flash. But with Prophet, not only is it untapping your lands, it's giving you the opportunity to play stuff when you wouldn't otherwise play it. So everything is condensed into this nice little package, which sure can get wrapped away, just like anything else.
Well, yeah, but you can't use that.
Yeah,
can you?
What? Wait a minute. I read the internet, and I understand that run answers noob is indeed a justifiable response.
Dice to removal. Dice to removal. Come on.
Dice.
Rubbish. Dice to removal.
How do you justify banning Prophet but not banning something like Deadeye, which has a longer history of abuse?
Well, one, Deadeye is not nearly as abusable. And two, we don't necessarily ban cards in relation to each other. Because if that's banned, then we should ban this, then we should ban that, and all of a sudden the ban list is 300 cards.
or 15,000.
Or 15,000, right.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
with dependency trees.
The only non-basic land you get to play is Sorrow's Path. And it's, you know, and it's not a great format.
Kids, if you don't listen to know what Sorrow's Path is, go check
it
out. It's a wonderfully terrible card.
Yeah, you plant your Zedru deck and donate it, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's you really, when you're managing the format, you have to be really careful about the sort of cascade effect. That if this, then that. We looked at exactly what what individual cards are doing to the format. I mean, if there was an identical Prophet of Krufix, that would get banned too, but there is nothing identical to it. You know, being the best card in the format, and certainly there's a lot of argument that it was, being the best card in the format is not itself banning criterion.
That's why Sol Ring's not been banned.
Well, it's so hardly the best card in the format.
I know a lot of people think it is.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
but it's, yeah, the when a card becomes sort of this devolution hub in games, then that's when we start really looking at it. When it's, okay, profits out, you know, we have to do something or all die pretty soon, then it becomes die pretty soon or get thoroughly annoyed and not be able to do anything for the rest of the game anyway. Then it becomes enjoyment. You know, it becomes about enjoyment of the play experience, and we want players to have a positive play experience. And I really think that the players who don't play Prophet of Krufix are going to say good riddance. And
and I'm still going to say good
riddance. Yeah, that was kind of going to be my follow-up, was that I think there are going to be a number of players who are like, you know what, I play this card, it's strong, it helps me win games, and I'm just so tired of it. So
yeah,
I don't think the Prophet banning is going to generate the kind of blowback that the side discussion of thinking about the idea that we've already discussed for 10 years of wanting off-color fetches not to be a thing would had generated.
Yeah. What do you say to all of the speculators who went deep on Prophet of Crucifix, perhaps in Japanese?
Phil.
Sucks to be you, I guess.
All right, guys, we have to get online and sell our profits right now. Yeah. They're at $1.50.
Yeah, you've got
sell.
Yeah, you've got I actually when we came out of the meeting, I think we met like 3 weeks ago or something. We came out of that meeting, I was just curious because all my profits are the profits on all my decks are foils. I was like, all right, how much value am I going to lose? Because when we banned Primetime, I had it about 6 decks, and the foils were $45 or $50. So, and of course, I mean, in advance of a banning, I'm never selling a card because all it takes is one person picking up on it.
And even the return address S Menery.
even if I took them in to my local game shop, and the guys at Armada Games are really good about having discretion if we ever talk about anything. Somebody else is going to, somebody is going to see me selling 6 foil Primeval Titans, and they're going to, and of course, I don't want to sell them to my friends and not tell them that their value is going to plummet. Right?
No one buy any cards off Sheldon. It's getting banned next week.
Right. No, actually, you can rest assured that if you're buying a card off of me, it's not getting banned next week.
Mm-hmm.
I went to look up the value, and I was like, oh, my foil profits are worth $4. Yay.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing in Standard, was it? Prophet Crucifix never became a thing in Standard. It didn't pick up in Modern. It was really only us Commander players giving it any love.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's the case.
Which is kind of shocking, but it is a 5-mana card. Right. So in those formats, the game is almost over when you're at 5-mana.
Right.
So if Jason Ault is correct, this will move the price of those foil profits by about 2 pennies.
Okay, well, all you need is 100 million transactions.
No, I think he said the foils are affected by Commander, but the normal versions are not. They're affected more by Modern and the other formats. Yeah, so she's selling at just about $250 for a non-foil version. So I guess I might lose, 6 or 8 pennies.
Yeah, if that's problematic, let me know, and I'll write you a check.
What an important question here, and it will apply to all our listeners. What card from Oath of the Gatewatch shall I put into my Maelstrom Wanderer deck to replace my Prophet Crucifix?
That Nissa is pretty good.
That's true. That Nissa is
that
very
Nissa.
Good.
We're gonna for the Commander 2015 league. We're going to do a free, a free swap an Oath of the Gatewatch card in, without playing a game. It's just like an extra draft pick, cool. And I'm reasonably sure that either that Nissa, because it creates plant tokens, and I've gotten Avenger or Zendikar into the deck now, so it creates plant tokens and stuff, and it's inexpensive, yep. And it makes plants to protect itself and so forth and so on, or Crush of Tentacles because Octopi, because tentacles.
Yeah, Crush of Tentacles is very cool. I've still yet to hit the magical Christmas land dream that is cascading from Avengers Endicar first, then Boundless Realm second. Never hit that. I've tried. Okay, I'll try Nissa.
Nissa seems pretty good. I did my Oath of the Gatewatch review on Star City Games this past week, so it's still up. You want to go look at that and you see all the cards that I think are the best in the format, of course. The new Oath cards that are best. My favorite certainly is Blinky the Eldrazi, because he has because he has the best name.
Thought not.
Although in you know, in terms of replacing Prophet, I think I'm going to pull Endbringer in. That's the Eldrazi that untaps during each other player's untap.
Yeah, seems reasonable. make a little colorless mana. I mean, you're playing enough colorless mana that I don't suspect you're going to need to slip any wastes into your decks. Although I think we might see commander players start playing more pain lands since they tap for colorless or they tap for mana of the colors.
Oh.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
I run them anyway, but yeah, they should go in people's decks. Now, quick rules question on that one. So I presumed it would be, just to clarify, I don't have to have... I can run wastes in my Animar deck.
Correct.
Yeah? Just because he doesn't have colorless in
Correct. Colorless is not a color, so it's that doesn't have anything to do with color identity, and you're allowed as many basic lands as you want.
I just have people's thought process being, well, if it has a mana symbol for colorless, and that mana symbol is... not in my commander's identity, can I do it? I presumed it would be you can, but yeah, from the horse's mouth, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, it was really easy to generate colorless mana. All you had to do is steal your opponent's lands.
Right.
That's true.
Phil, you set him up, I'll knock him down. which segues very nicely into the third change we're making. We are removing Rule 4. That's the mana generation rule. This means that you may generate, in your commander deck, mana of any color. That doesn't mean that you can put basic lands of a different color into your deck. Lands still follow the color identity rules. Or mana-producing lands still follow the color identity rules. But this has become... this was one of the things... We've actually talked about the idea of this for more than 3 years. It's been on and off and up and down, and we've kind of swung back and forth on it, and there was never enough consensus support for the idea until Oath of the Gatewatch and its focus on colorless mana made us... It didn't... You know, we didn't do it in response. It just restarted the conversation again. So, I was really kind of the last holdout, not in that I was the sort of blocking any change, but I mean, all five of us love Rule 4. We think that Rule 4 is, a great part of the flavor of the format, and we're going to be sorry to see it go. But it was a little awkward to have colorless mana easier to generate in the format than in other formats by virtue of Rule 4. Well, you know, I have Darksteel Ingot, I'll just tap it, you know, I'm playing blue-green, I'll tap it for black, and oops, it's colorless. The mana generation rule also gets rid of some annoying rules loopholes. And we really dislike annoying rules loopholes, and when we can get rid of them sort of cleanly and neatly, we're all for it.
And this does that.
It does that elegantly and simply. So what does this allow us to do? The only thing that sprung to my mind is it allows me with my Centriplets deck to not rely on Celestial Dawn.
Right. Yeah, you can.
And that's presuming I've stolen some lands off my opponents already.
Or again, have City of Brass, Mana Confluence, Darksteel Ingot, Coalition Relic, or whatever. I gotta be really honest with you. I was kind of hanging on to this by my fingertips. Like, I really don't want to let this go. Again, for flavor reasons, which are, by the way, particularly valid reasons to do things. But I find the copy and control archetype to be sort of overrepresented in the format. And I just didn't want to give this that archetype fuel to get even better. Because it's pretty good. You know, I spend...
It's going to make the Chromatic Lantern in my Silumgar deck a lot better.
Yeah, right. But Toby visited in December, and we had some good conversations, and on this topic in particular, and he said, you know, think about it. Think about all your decks that have activated abilities, and how many of those things that get stolen have colored activated abilities that are not already blue? And, like, I guess, you know, I couldn't think of one off the top of my head. So, you know, it seems like it's going to be a major impact, but as Toby said, I think it's more like Mana Burn. It was something, but it doesn't come up enough to be significant. So again, when we can streamline things without actually costing us very much, then it seems reasonable to do it.
It does increase the power level of the cards that allow you to cast things from your opponent's hands, like Send Triplets, and there are a couple of other cards that require you to pay a mana cost.
Right, I guess Havangle Lich might get better.
Yeah, that's true.
Praetor's Grasp, is that the one that allows you to cast something from someone's deck? Yeah.
Right, but again, you have to be planning on it.
We're talking about Dimir cards, basically.
Right.
Mostly.
Well, many of us play Gilded Lotus already.
Sure.
And Darksteel Ingot and so forth.
Right.
So.
Yeah, again, there's a couple cards that get a little more flexible. Like you said, Gilded Lotus, Darksteel Ingot for sure.
Birds of Paradise, if we're going outside of...
Yeah. And anything, even Noble Hierarch, I guess. Oh, no, you can't, because you can only run that in the... But still, yeah, I mean, the real thing is that the number of cards that get played a lot in the format that this impacts is significantly lower than it seems that there would be at first blush. Because I was like, no way! I was like, no way! And then, again, cooler heads were like, let's look at the data. Let's look at the real data. And once I saw that, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to miss your rule 4, but...
You said, let's look at the real data. Does that mean that you got a $2 million grant, finally, to look at this from a data-centric view?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we did, Phil, and I'm still waiting for the check.
But you went ahead and you're building a house based on the
yeah, exactly.
receipt of that.
Was that grant agreed with by a Nigerian prince who contacted you via email?
Oh, you know, I don't know how Phil came up with the cash. I'm I'm just waiting.
Hey, the real issue with this that I see is kind of the slippery slope problem, right? Like, what is hybrid mana next?
Nope.
And why?
Because hybrid mana cards are cards of both colors. There's no way getting away from the fact that Una is both black and blue. And
very much.
We actually believe that the mana eliminating the mana rule reinforces the idea of color identity as opposed to undercuts it. That now there's just no argument anymore. Hybrid mana is mana of both colors. I understand how it was designed. I understand that they wanted hybrid mana. You know, they wanted Una to be able to be played in a mono black deck. But then again, when they designed it, they didn't have color identity to think about. So if you have a circle of protection black, it protects you from Una. If you have a circle protection blue, it protects you from Una. Una is blue and black in color identity in all Magic worlds. So, yeah, this actually cuts the pins right out from under the hybrid mana argument.
You know, so you see it as you have two glasses, two 44-ounce glasses of root beer, as opposed to you've got a 44-ounce glass of Coke or root beer.
Right.
Got it.
Being English, I have no idea what size 44 ounces is. That's a weight, isn't it?
Yeah.
No idea.
44,
something
44
like...
ounces is, well, I mean, again, for you people who like to kick the round ball and beat each other up, 44 ounces is one beer, I believe.
One pint.
Yeah. No.
Right.
It's bigger.
Which
it's
makes
way
more
bigger
sense.
Than a, it's way bigger than a pint. It's one.
A yard.
It's just,
a
it's
yard.
Just one beer. No, it's like 44 ounces is like a is more than a quart, isn't it?
How much is it in parsecs?
For those concerned, I actually just looked it up. It's 1.3 and some change liters.
Right.
Oh God, that's what, yeah, that's like 3 pints.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an aperitif before you go out on the town properly.
Because your pints are really, really tiny.
It comes in pints.
So, just to go back to... We're not all hobbits in this country, despite what Tolkien implied. Going back to the argument that losing Rule 4 is somehow an impingement on flavour... Could you not argue that it supports flavour? So, for example, in the story, Mycene triplets are these enchantresses. They're like Esper versions of sirens that take over people's minds. And they're gaining access to the knowledge of the people who they've mind-slaved. You know, it's quite easy to argue flavour, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say it's you can make a reasonable flavour argument there.
Yeah. I guess it's going to be hard to hear criticism about this rule change until I've seen someone break it, you know, do something broken with it without on purposely specifically designing a deck to abuse Rule 4 or the lack of Rule 4.
Nate has already brewed a deck.
Right. I mean, again, it just gets rid of a few more annoying loopholes. So now you can't lock somebody out by donating Celestial Dawn.
Poor Zedru.
I love Celestial Dawn.
Okay.
It's a great card.
All right, yeah. I mean, I think overall these are pretty significant changes, but I'm having trouble coming up with real complaints about them.
I think the one that's going to catch the most flack is going to be the profit banning, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you ban anything...
Sure.
If you banned an obscure card that no one plays, there'll be someone in the corner of the internet somewhere frothing about how terrible the rules committee are. And
well, think about the off-color fetches. I hesitate to call it a discussion. polemic. If we had pulled the trigger on that 10 years ago. When we first started thinking, hey, I don't like off-color fetches. They don't make sense. Nobody would think that they were getting their toys taken away. But as soon as somebody plays with something and it goes away, even if they're aware that it's just toxic to the format, but you know they're self-interested as opposed to group interested. And I understand that. Players and people who manage formats come at things from two different perspectives. I get it. I don't expect every player to have the interest of all the other players of the format in mind. I would hope that they would be enlightened, and especially in this format where it is more about having a good time with other people as opposed to just, crushing their hopes and hearing the lamentations of their women. You still have to understand that people like their stuff. And if they do a thing, especially if they're doing kind of broken things, they want to continue to be able to do their broken things. I would offer up that there are still plenty of broken things to do in the format, just not with profit accrupics anymore.
When are you going to ban Melek? Melek is hideously abusable.
The red-blue guy?
Yeah, the 6-mana cost red-blue guy.
Who's really neat when you cast him the first time, but if you have to cast him a second or a third time, it's really super annoying. That guy?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. I think that problem will take care of itself.
Oh, God. I think it did when Mizzix was printed.
Yeah, Mizzix is kind of interesting. It's been interesting in our Commander 2015 games. There's a certain inevitability about it.
What we found of it is whoever's playing Mizzix gets killed really fast.
Yeah, that's, like, that's
you have
kind
to be
the...
stopped within 6 to 10 turns, or you're just going to go off in that inevitable way. So, yeah, kill
right. I mean, in the very closed environment of the Commander 2015 League, there's an inevitability to the Mizzix deck. As a matter of fact, as we play more games, you see that the Calumny deck is the immediate threat. You know, the Calumny deck is the one that can kill people kind of quickly. So you have to deal with that. If you make that player cast Calumny a second time or a third time, the pressure is off. The Marin and the Azuri and the Daxos decks are mid-rangey. Azuri is not something that can put a big pile of hurt on you on turn 3. Although on turn 6, it might be able to because it's gone crazy and gotten a zillion counters on Azuri and whatnot. But yeah, if you don't in those mid turns effectively deal with the Mizzix deck, it's just going to ruin your day. And Todd Palmer, who is the player in our league that is running that deck, has inserted Sphinx Bone Wand into the deck. So that's one of his big kill conditions.
It's a very good card.
Yeah, that's a good card. I think I put that in my Mizzix deck as well.
You can't.
So are we?
You can't complain.
It sounds like we're not. Carry on, Sheldon.
You can't complain when you get killed by Sphinx Bone Wand.
No, you can't. It sounds like we're shifting naturally into Commander 2015. Do we?
Yes. Don't ruin it.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I was going to say, didn't we have some questions about Commander 2015?
Yeah. I don't think there's anything else. I think we're pretty clear on the changes, right? Simple, streamline, get rid of annoying loopholes and frustrating cards, and have mulligans that let you get an opening hand without being able to abuse them. So Commander 2015 it is.
So tonight I'll be playing as many of my Simic decks and digging for Prophet of Kruphix and a fully balanced hand of lands as much as I possibly can.
Play it one more time, and you know, and now I can give the guys in the Commander League a straight answer on why Prophet of Kruphix isn't already in my deck, because it certainly would have been my second or third pick, but probably third pick. I still go with Cyclonic Rift first, Avenger of Zendikar second, and probably Prophet third. But I gave them some, which you know they're smart people, and you know we've been friends for a long time, so I don't know if they were buying it. It's like, yeah, if I play Prophet, I'll put the target hat on, and I need some other cards to do this, and so that. And, you know, we'll see if they bought it. But
all those people automatically start taking Prophet out of their index.
That's funny. In what we are referring to occasionally as the lost episode, we talked kind of about that league. Would you mind talking about the league structure and
sure.
why you did it and how it works? It's wonderful.
So it's a league that I'm doing with my Monday Night Gamers, and conveniently there are 5 of us, and we each got one of the Commander 2015 decks at random, and we are playing them against each other, and after each game we get to make one change to the deck. So we want the league to be as true singleton as possible. So if someone else has a card in their deck already, you can't add it. There are some cards there are multiples of in the decks. Corpse Augur comes to mind. There are a few others. So, but after that, once somebody picks a card, nobody else can pick the card. Obviously, you're only fighting with 2 other players, one in each of your colors for the other cards. And if there is a question about pick order after any particular game, we have a pecking order. So first pick goes to the first person out. Second pick goes to the person that killed them. Third pick goes to the person with the most experience counters at the end, who already hasn't had a pick. Fourth pick goes to last person standing, and then the fifth pick goes to the person that doesn't have a point yet. We call that the no point in living point. There have already been a couple of times where players have cut somebody off of a card that they were going to pick. Keith Bogart, who plays the Golgari deck, snagged Greater Good before I did. I mean, it's way better in his deck, and he was definitely, it was the right call for him to first pick it. And there have been a couple of other cuts, when somebody's like, yeah, I'm going to pick, and then you'd hear somebody else go, damn it! So the idea...
Did you get Cyclonic Rift, Sheldon?
That was my first pick, as a matter of fact.
Good choice.
Now, did you throw the first game so that you could first pick Cyclonic Rift?
I did not. I think Michael plays Calumny, and it was just it fired on all cylinders early, and I really didn't have any enough defense against it because it turns out Calumny is okay when you can chump block her, but once she gets trample, it's really difficult to not just get crushed. Especially with Sunrise Sovereign, which gives giants +2/+2 and trample.
Right.
We did talk about classic blunders on the Lost episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
Never get involved in a land war in Asia. Never never go in against the Sicilian when death is on the line. And don't blow up Blade of Selves when you have the chance. That's the third classic blunder, because all Michael had was Calumny in play, and dropped Blade of Selves, and I had Viridian Shaman, but Keith had again with the Golgari deck, and we see that one can. I think that's the best one out of the box, although I think mostly they're pretty well balanced. He had a Skull Clamp, and I'm like, that Skull Clamp is way more of an immediate threat in the Marin deck because it's crazy. So I'm going to blow up that instead of Blade of Selves. And then Michael played Sunrise Sovereign and equipped Blade of Selves to it. And, suddenly there were a field full of 11-11 giants plus double striking, I don't know, it was, 65-65 Calumny or something. It was crazy. Definitely blow up Blade of Selves when you have the chance.
Wow.
Going back to the rest of the league setup, so we're gonna only update a limited number of cards. So we're gonna keep the sort of central themes of the decks. If I built Azuri, I might not go with the sort of Sapperling creation that they've gone with. Obviously, you're gonna want to generate some tokens because that way Azuri gets the experience counters. But I think we haven't decided on the raw number, but I think it's half of the non-land cards in the deck. So the most we'll update is about 30 cards. We're about 12 cards. We're 12 games in. And I just did for last week's article, I think I did the update to all 12 cards. So you can kind of follow along as we're, and seeing what we're slipping in and slipping out of the decks.
Are you going mean and putting Sage of Hours into Azuri?
No, that's the Infi Turns one. Who would want to do that?
Yeah.
I like my friends, actually.
What monster would do that?
I like my friends, and I want to play Magic with them. I don't want them to sit around and watch me play Magic. Although I will say that I back to back picked both Ulamogs. I was like, you know what? I get behind. If the Azuri deck doesn't get a really good start, it becomes a non-factor in the game. That's what I've noticed. It doesn't have this sort of comeback capability, which is why I first picked Cyclonic Rift, which is why I actually am considering Crush of Tentacles to get some of that comeback ability. The green one, green six, Great Aurora, is also something I'm thinking about. I was like, okay, there are There are wraths in the format now. You know, the Boros deck has Blasphemous Act and Chain Reaction and Michael's already, as Michael's put Martial Coup in, if it wasn't already in there. Shay's picked up for the Daxos deck a Wrath and a Rout. So creatures are getting blown up, right? So I need stuff that doesn't get blown up. Asceticism was one of my early picks, as a matter of fact, because I can regenerate them with that. And
yeah.
And being hexproof means a lot. It means that the tricks of the Mizzix deck and the targeted removal of the Marin deck are less effective. So being undestructible is really good for Ulamog.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. In each of the 2013, 14, and 15 years, I've wanted to run a league using just those decks.
Uh-huh.
And it sounds like you've got a great format. Do you mind if we steal that?
Of course not. We're having a lot of fun with it, and I think you know, we'll play this for the next few months, set the decks aside, go back to playing sort of normal Commander, and then if there are new decks, you know, as soon as there are new precons, we'll do the same exact thing again, because you can almost always count on there being 5 precons. And again, since our group is 5, there we go.
And you're able to reliably get that group together with all 5 people?
Yes. Wow. We have had an RPG going since October 2010, although we're on hiatus right now with my with this semester. I'm taking 3 grad courses plus an undergrad course, so my time's a little more precious.
Yeah, I'll bet.
But there's still enough time to play Magic on my night. So, as a matter of fact, I go right from campus. My class gets out at like 6:15 and go right over to Armada. And it's simple because Michael being one of the owners, and Shay being one of the employees, they're there, and they can hop in, and then the other 2 guys come and we play. And once the semester's over, we'll probably go back to, once the semester's over, the new house will be built.
That's right.
The game room from hell will be built, and we will have probably weekly Commander Thursday night games where, you know, there'll be an invitation list of, I don't know, 8 to 10 people, and if there are 8 people, we'll play 2 games of 4. If there are 10 people, we'll play 2 games of 5. If there are 7 people, we'll play a game of 4 or 5, and the other 2 or 3 can do something else. Because 7-player games are wrong. Even 6-player games are wrong.
You've said that wrong. 7-player games are long. Long.
Yeah, long and wrong.
Which is your favorite new commander from the set? I know you're playing Azuri, so is that your favorite?
No, I think I like Marin better, because just that Golgari graveyard reanimation style is what I really, really like. I mean, that's sort of my wheelhouse for playing Commander.
How did you select the decks? Why didn't you just write out pick that one?
We passed them out randomly.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, there was just a random assignment that way. That way there was no, you know, there were no discussions, no hurt feelings, no nothing.
Which one were you thinking, I don't want that one. Yeah, I didn't get it.
I think all of them are fine. I mean, there wasn't one. I mean, Michael's complaint about the Calumny deck has been that it's pretty straightforward. You know, it's get the general out, start smashing. There's no subtlety to it, and there's not a lot to bring there. You know, there's not a lot of play, as it were, to bring to it, where everybody else, all the other decks, you have to really think about your lines of play a lot harder. But then again, I love the face smashy style. So
yeah. So, and as an aside, sorry, I couldn't recall if you had said that this episode or during the last episode. Listener Bruce Lee, who is at Reserveless, he asks, why does Boros suck in EDH? And I realize that may not be true for the Calumny deck, even though it's straightforward.
Who asked that question?
Bruce Lee, who is at Reserveless.
Okay. My answer is Bruce because you touch yourself and God is angry.
Wow. Is this the first time we've had to bleep a guest? I mean, this is amazing.
Was that a bleep? No, was that bleepable?
No, I would leave it in, but I have no control over the edit. I'm regularly edited by my co-hosts.
In my head, there are two factions between the conservative, keep it family-friendly group and the let's get more risque group. I'm not sure which faction is winning. And truthfully, I don't know how it's represented in the rest of the hosts.
I think we strike a nice balance. There have been times where I've said something, you two have gone, no, that's being edited out. And I'm like, oh, come on. It's like, fine.
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
Let's
go back to the lightning round, and I promise not to say anything controversial.
Right. It is time for the lightning round. We have a bunch of questions from our listeners. They assembled over the last couple of weeks, and we know your time is short. You do have to get drunk in about an hour and a half, and you do have people coming over in about an hour and a half.
Well, I have to start getting drunk in about an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's true. And they have to help you move house, just as Sean said. So, and we will not... God, there's so many topics all the time with you, Sheldon. We will not be talking about the judge banning. We won't be going into detail about the off-color fetches. So, Nate, you are the traditional lightning round kicker offer.
Okay. Robin Larson asks... There are a lot of players of the format, as well as players outside of the format, who have a lot of opinions on how Commander EDH is supposed to be played. I, too, have, in pride and arrogance, used the term the spirit of the format, perhaps incorrectly. My question is, what is your definition of that term?
The spirit of the format is letting everybody play the game. So, It's not about a particular play style. If you want to play the most dirtly dirtle fests, that's great. If you want to play turn three kill, let's race to our combo, that's fine too. As long as everybody's playing the same game, that's the spirit of EDH. The spirit of the format is playing together, not against each other.
Beautiful.
Well. Very, very succinctly put, sir. Kyle Carson at Kyle C. Carson asks, what commander doesn't see enough play or respect when it's played?
Yasova. I mean, you got to talk about your girlfriend. Yasova it is.
And as a tangential question also from Kyle, do you think that edhrec.com... is a good or a bad thing for commander deck brewing overall?
You know, we talked about this on the last episode, and I still don't remember what EDHREC is.
EDHREC is a site that looks at the decks uploaded to a bunch of different sources and kind of correlates the most commonly used cards.
I see.
It's a profiler / recommender, and it can even generate an entire deck list for you if you wanted to just try a... more or less random set.
The police tell me that profiling is okay. I'm not sure I agree with that, but...
We've got politics and religion from Sheldon now. Right. Just get some Hearthstone on there for the triple.
I didn't even think of that as a religious thing. Sorry. Yeah, it didn't even... Right. That didn't even occur to me. Any resource that helps you... generate ideas is a great idea. You know, anything that spurs thought and gets you thinking a little more deeply seems like a great idea. I will check out EDHREC, and I promise to this time, for real, and not forget.
We've played games with the owner/programmer Donald Miner. He's a very good guy. We're eventually going to have him on. We have an idea for a show plan, but we won't spoil that now.
Kyle also asks, Sheldon, mentioned a sweet game with a new Anafenza and three Carador decks. What or why made that game so good?
Well, because, it added a layer. Anafenza added a layer to play that, you know, the rest of us had to deal with. And I actually think it was four Caridor players, not three. It might have been three. Anyway, that, you know, we had to, from the get-go, the rest of us who were playing Caridor had to consider how Anofenza was going to affect the game, and play accordingly. So whenever a new element comes into the game where you can't just play your deck the way you designed it, you have to think about it in different terms, makes the game more interesting to me. And this, you know, in this case, it was like, okay, I know he's going to play Anofenza at some point. How are we going to deal with it? Do we arch enemy him and just get rid of him and then play our thing? Or can Anofenza be, you know, can I sort of use that Anofenza against the other Caridor players? So it became a really interestingly deep strategic game, along a line that we hadn't seen in play before. You know, if it's me playing Caridor, one guy playing Anofenza, and two other, you know, not related decks, then all I kind of care about is killing the Anofenza player so that I can play my deck and not have to worry about it. But in this case, again, there was an opportunity to maybe use the Anofenza player to our advantage. So we kept them around a little longer than we might otherwise have. And then once it got to, you know, it got to the point where he was going to just, you know, nuke all our graveyards and too bad for us, then we ganged up on him and killed him.
That's great. All right. In the interest of giving you 1 hour to gird yourself for your moving party, we really should stick to the lightning round format if we can.
Okay.
Chris Longton asks, what are your favorite two-headed giant EDH commander pairings?
I've never played two-headed giant commander, despite having a two-headed giant playmat. It's two playmats that fit together into one big picture.
Oh, neat. Very cool. Magnet at Murder Magnet asks, have you heard of the $2 format, 2DH, instead of EDH? What are some of your favorite cards that come under $2?
Well, Commander started as the sort of dollar rare format, so there's probably a zillion good choices out there. You know, any variant is cool because it lets you see the things that you don't see. We actually have a guy at the shop, John Bolt. I haven't seen him play it in a while, but he basically has a pauper Child of Alara deck. So, as a matter of fact, it might be an all commons Child of Alara deck, and it runs just fine. Thank you very much. It's really, really cool. I think I actually posted, I mean, it might have been 2 or 3 years ago, but I think I posted his deck list at some point.
And don't forget, listeners, Prophet of Crucifix is under $2.
Or will be.
Uh-huh. Russ, right, at Adopt MTG Tokens asks, what are some cards you'd like to see reprinted?
Ooh, I would like to see reprinted all the stuff that is not available in foil just yet. Fault Line is the one that comes right to mind. So some stuff from Urza's Saga that may even be on the reserve list for all I know. I would like to be able to get some cards that I play and get them in foil.
Cool. Alex Zito is at Alex Zito says, what's the health of the EDH format right now? Where do you see it going in the next couple of years? That's going to be hard to answer quickly, but give it a go.
I think the format is spectacularly healthy, and it shows because we have such a vibrant online community, and you see the format played at GPs and whatnot everywhere. And I'm not talking about the competitive pods; I'm talking about the casual groups getting together, like the thing that Star City Games did at the GP Atlanta. The format is really, really healthy.
Politic and Ghost at EDH Ghost. The reason for banning Primetime was when he comes into play, everything evolves around him. How is Prophet or Deadeye any different? They become steal or kill.
I reject the notion that that Deadeye becomes as centralizing as Prophet of Crucifix or Primeval Titan or Sylvan Primordial. Deadeye is fine.
Deadeye needs something else with him. Yeah. He's not just a single card that does it,
right,
isn't he? He's part of a combo of something.
I think you might find Blinky the Eldrazi a little rougher than than Deadeye Navigator because it doesn't have the soul bond nonsense. That's a different discussion for a different. Forward. That's a different discussion for a non-lightning round time.
Matthew Moss at Matthew the Hat 83. Oh, sorry, Mattin the Hat 83. Is there a possibility of the rules committee handing control over to WotC? What is your banning process?
No. Was the question, what is the possibility? None. And the banning process is...
explained
in a previous episode and explained in a StarCityGames.com article. Go search for it.
Yeah, if you look on the Commander in back catalog, the first episode Sheldon's in, we talk about it at length.
Aaron D. at Uncle Landrops. Will there ever be a day when the Rules Committee forms a super oligarchy with dual commander?
No.
He also asked why not.
No. They're two different. They have two different motivations. They don't make sense to be part of the same group.
Hmm. All right. He also asks, there are so many fundamental changes to the rules that have created a high variance in playgroups. Is this the Rules Committee's goal?
I'm not sure what he means by high variance in playgroups. That the question doesn't make any sense to me.
I think he means that there are a lot of playgroups creating a lot of different house rules.
Good for them.
Yeah,
that means the format's working the way it's supposed to.
So that's part of their goals, I think, Aaron. Yeah.
And one last question. What would be the perfect food/adult beverage pairing for a commander game between Sheldon Mennery, me, and Mark Globus? And this is by at Blair Witch Green.
Well, the problem with that is that Mark Globus and I have, and Benny, I guess, have very different food ideas. Mark is a vegan and doesn't drink the alcohols. So it would be very difficult to plan the perfect meal without making it a sort of Jack and Mrs. Spratt sort of thing. I actually, at GP Atlanta, went out to dinner with Mark, and we found a Legal Seafoods or something where they had enough vegan dishes that he was particularly happy. I don't think we're going to eat the same meal anytime soon. Benny and I, we could probably throw down on some ribs. That'd be awesome.
Can I recommend beans on toast?
No, because I like my friends.
And that has lard in it, doesn't it?
It's all got lard in it, and it's all been boiled. We boil the toast.
It's boiled then fried, right?
Yeah, deep fried, obviously.
Of course.
Served with chips.
Yeah, of course.
And by that I mean French fries.
Yes.
But not. Ooh, I felt wrong to say. I've not read ahead on our show plan.
Oh,
so
very
told
good.
Not to.
Very good. We have a very special message of the week. I'm going to paraphrase it since we are short on time. It is from Chris, who is Dead Parrot 19. On Tapped Out and also at Google Gmail. He says, now I'm going to read this a particular way and it may be misleading. I haven't practiced this, so forgive me. He said, to cast, love the work that you guys do. Just been listening and laughing to the Xmas episode and had to send some appreciations your way. You've very quickly become my favorite podcast alongside Commander Cast. Well, thank you. That's actually wonderful company to be placed alongside. Also, I accept Sean as our national representative for podcasts. What a fine figure of a gentleman. Rule on, Britannia. And yes, Brago is dirty. Oh, and Happy New Year to you all.
Well, I am honored. I expect the Queen will be sending me a letter to go and be anointed by sword at the palace.
Wait a minute, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that Sean didn't send that letter.
Quick, he's on to us. Leg it.
leg him.
Thank you very much, Chris. That's very genuinely very kind, and I will keep trying to represent the true red, white, and blue for as long as I can.
I knew you'd get a kick out of that, Sean.
Well, thank you. I'm nothing if not egotistical.
So we have now identified 30% of our English listeners, haven't we?
There's Chris, and there's listener Pinky, and listener Pete. That's all of them. And a mysterious 10% English person. But yes.
Oh. All right. So, Sheldon, how can people reach you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Sheldon Menery. You can find me on Twitter, at Sheldon Menery.
Oh.
You can find me every Thursday on StarCityGames.com, writing about this very format. And you can email me at firstname.lastname@gmail if you should like.
I wonder how many people are going to send email to firstname.lastname@gmail now. Sheldon, thank you. It has been a real pleasure. We always love having you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on. I always have fun when I come, so we can make it not quite as long until the next time.
And to our listeners, here's an abbreviated version of the end of the show, right? We love you. Thank you for listening. Tell all your friends. You can reach us by going to our website, commander@mtg.com. Our email is cass@commander@mtg.com. You can find us on all of the social media outlets and then some by searching for Commander in MTG Podcast. Individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Sean, do you want to ask Sheldon?
Sheldon, if you could just say for us, and that's our show.
And that's our show.
Yeah!